Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket for a little while anyway. You get to sit back and relax and listen to three cricket coaches talk about the game, all aspects of the game, playing it, coaching it, all that kind of thing. And who are the three coaches? Well, I'm David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you, first of all, it's the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garraz. How are you?
I'm really well. I've just been handed a salted caramel Haagen-Dazs ice cream. Other ice creams are available, and it is delicious.
I have very strong opinions on salted caramel, which we won't get into today. It might take up the whole rest of the show. So I'll just congratulate you, and we'll move on.
Thank you.
Secondly, it's the head of cricket performance at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. Any salted caramel for you?
I'm actually sitting in a small room with a bottle of water, which is enormously depressing now. I want to hear more about your views on the ice cream, David. Presuming it's a positive view.
I'm not sure it's positive.
Oh, my God. That's
I think we're
great.
Going to come from two different ends of a spectrum on this one.
I don't want to upset the salted caramel set, so I'll agree to disagree on this matter.
It's actually a distraction, the salted caramel Haagen-Dazs, because I had my first one whilst umpiring the other day, and one of the parents was walking around
with two ice creams.
having two ice creams, and decided that the best place to deposit the second one was with me. So a wicket fell. I went to the boundary, got my ice cream. I was also scoring on my iPad at the same time. So I was at square leg, and unfortunately, my team were fielding. And as I looked up following an appeal with an ice cream in my mouth, looking over the top of my iPad, I realised that I possibly had missed a stumping opportunity. And Hugo King, our wicketkeeper, was a bit distraught because he reckoned it was the best bit of work he did all summer, but unfortunately I wasn't watching, so it had to be an off day, didn't it?
I've got to say, Garraz, you couldn't have given him out anyway. Your hands were full there, weren't they? There's no way of signalling.
I think you could just stick the ice cream up in the air, couldn't you, surely?
Yeah, that's in certain parts of the world, that's taken as a definite out. Ice cream in the air.
Ice cream in the air is out. I reckon, I can imagine a number of international umpires with particularly good giving out sort of fingers being brilliant with an ice cream in the hand.
Yep. Games would be quite short though, wouldn't they? Because you'd have to get through the ice cream pretty quick. So games would be about 10 minutes. Well, back to actual cricket. Let's answer some questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers too. The Pitch Vision website over at pitchvision.com. And how this works is we pick a couple of questions, we try to answer them, and then we pick a winner, which is a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Two people have sent in questions this week that we've picked, and the first one of those is James. And James says, the kids at Millfield and PGS are obviously very lucky to have such brilliant coaches running their cricket program. My son is a very keen club cricketer, but cricket at his state school is practically non-existent. He's the school captain, year seven, but this season they've played about three games, with another one being cancelled as the opposition couldn't field a side. One of the schools they played against had absolutely staggering facilities and left the team with an open mouth. With at least 90% of the England cricket team being privately educated, what can be done to encourage cricket at state schools? And he's got another question as well about scholarships. But let's focus on encouraging cricket in state schools, because that's quite an interesting one. I'm sure you've got some ideas.
Well, I think it's becoming increasingly difficult. I mean, I don't know about Sam, but the cricket within the educational structure, I think, is becoming increasingly difficult to manage, because it's really, if you think about the independent school structure in the UK, we've got another week. I don't know about Sam, but we've got another week, and we've got about 15 cup matches to get in. And obviously you've got that balance then from an academic perspective with people starting new courses. So, example, you know, the lower sixth are starting their upper sixth syllabus, so they're going to be missing some time. You've got the length of cricket doesn't help either, because our shortest game is probably still a long game in many other sports' eyes. So there's lots of challenges for independent school cricket. I think the benefit to independent school cricket is the exposure that you get throughout the 12-month period. So you listen to the programmes that Sam's able to put on down at PGS, and you listen to this show and hear the types of things and the amount of contact time we get. That's the biggest difference for me. The in-season stuff, actually, it's good, but ultimately, I view this, and this will probably make me incredibly unpopular with my employers, but I view this period of April to the end of June as being really a pre-season for club cricket and county cricket going on into July and August, because that's ultimately where players get judged. So we provide a 12-month programme, I suppose, to develop people through, rather than it being, as it is in state schools and a lot of state schools, it being maybe a 4 or 5 week programme of matches. So that's the biggest difference for us. The other thing in the UK, and you know, I think this is mirrored in a number of countries around the world as well, is that state school cricket is really should be on a pathway into club cricket, really, as the same way as the independent school market. You know, there's no way that you're going to become a professional cricketer by playing independent school cricket and then not playing any club cricket leading up to a professional contract. It doesn't work like that. So all schools, whether they're independent or whether they're state, should be working with their external partners in club cricket, because in club cricket you've got that format, you've got those different levels of teams that players can work their way through up for a longer period of time than just the 9 weeks that we get in the independent school season. So whilst it might look fantastic, the independent school season, it is part of the overall process. It isn't the whole of the development process. So for me, if you are at state school, fantastic. If you can get a few games, they are additional games to what you can get in clubs, but really most of your development is going to happen in club, and if you're good enough, then obviously in districts and county stuff, and again the club part becomes part of that process. But if you can get 4 or 5 or 10 games, as it was for me when I was at state school a billion years ago, when probably there was a little bit more enthusiasm from teachers and less academic pressure on teachers to be able to give up their time for cricket, we played quite a lot. But now if you can get those additional games, so you've talked about 3 or 4 there, you know, there are additional games along the way, but really club cricket is where you need to be getting most of your match play. That is for sure.
I almost feel like Lavers, if you've got a school which struggles to get cricket on for a variety of reasons, we know that the modern pressures, schools have lots of things to do, and perhaps, you know, the teachers are not necessarily as much into their cricket, so it might be that, you know, cricket falls by the wayside. So almost certainly from my point of view as a club coach, and you've seen it from the club coaching side as well, I feel like if the schools can sort of introduce players in some way or another, even if it's on a very limited basis, and then have the enthusiasm to get the kids to go from, if they enjoy it on any level, get the kids to go from the school to the clubs, then that's where it's going to happen. But the challenge is first getting even that small amount of cricket in there, and then secondly, getting the kids who are enthused by it to do more than just do their cricket and then go, right, that's brilliant, I'm off for my summer holidays now.
Yeah, that link and that relationship between the school and the club is vital, and that first session or that first bit of contact and making that something that really engages children is really important. We had, when I was director of cricket over at Burridge Cricket Club locally, something we had was some of our younger coaches would go in and deliver within schools and subsequently give out the information about how to come and join the club and that kind of thing. But making sure that session was of suitable quality and interest, and it was engaging and it was enjoyable and it was making people want to come back and play again, it was absolutely vital, because that wasn't the first port of call, that was the only port of call. If that didn't happen, then they weren't going to go anywhere, because they weren't going to get any other cricket at school, they weren't going to come along to the cricket club unless there was a reason for it to happen. So making that first point of contact a really enjoyable experience is vital, and without that it's very difficult to see where the links come. Obviously we want that relationship to work from both sides, ideally. So not only is your local cricket club going into half a dozen local schools and trying to attract people out, but you would like to think that the school is also trying to go out and speak to these local cricket clubs and push the schools towards it. However, as Gareth has said there, there are enormously increasing pressures on teachers to achieve a wide multitude of things within their schools in terms of exam results and more lessons in a week, more children in classes. It gets harder and harder and harder. So where does this relationship with cricket rank in their priority of things to do in the week? Probably really, really low down on the list. So because of that, it has to be something that is probably more about drawing them to the club and the onus being placed on them rather than relying on the school to push them in your direction. But if you do run a club and you are in a position to think about, there are loads of initiatives with the ECB that you can do where you can get the funding to go and send one of your coaches in there and go and initiate that relationship and you can then start hopefully attracting some people. The next step is you've got to have your own house in order. You've got to make sure that the sessions they turn up to your club are enjoyable, are going to make them better, are going to make them want to come back. So it is within the hands of the club. As a parent, and this is kind of where we're speaking from in this question, that's a little bit less difficult because you don't have much control over what the school offers or what the club offers. So you're then down to kind of looking and trying to locate yourself in the right club or the right school for that, as well as the thousands of other things that you need to get from your school. So it's not going to be easy, but as we say a lot here during games and in training sessions, how can you go and influence it? There might be something small you can do which will have an impact, and that will have a positive spiral into what you're looking for, which, and I very much agree with Gareth, the stuff you get from an independent school is largely the winter programming and the stuff that happens from October through to April, which is difficult to find a school or a club that has the facility to offer that.
Next question is from Venkat. And Venkat says, I'm an off spinner and I'm what you would call a spin bowling geek. I don't have any major natural talent, but I've worked and worked and worked on getting better. The problem I seem to have is something I've never been able to get over. It's my diffidence. I try and look confident or strut around, but I come across as a fake. I fear the worst. I always believe that the next ball is going for a six. I believe the captain won't give me another over, and this goes on. On the field, when I'm having a bad day, it only seems to get worse. Do you have any thoughts from your experiences on how to get over this? You do have to be brave, don't you, to be a spinner?
You do have to be brave, but firstly, I think you've got the biggest talent of all, to be honest, because you work really hard. And I think it's becoming more public knowledge and awareness now that the notion of talent is probably the biggest misnomer that there is in the world. And ultimately, the people that appear to be the most talented when we see them on telly are the ones that have put the most work into it. So you're on the right track. And I always think the biggest talent is the driver to want to be better and to work hard for it. So congratulations, you are in fact very talented in my eyes. And the second thing for me is that all of those beliefs that you've had there, I'd like you to challenge, because you know, you talk about, I feel that I'm going to get taken off by the captain. You know, how many times does that happen? Actually, when you look at the bare facts, when you're bowling, how many times do you get into that over and then that is your last over? Well, you only have to look at your analysis to work out that, you know, if you are bowling one over every single week and that is all that you're getting, and that's the truth, all right, that belief is true. But if you're getting a second over and then many more after it, then it's a limited belief. And you need to use facts to help you to eradicate and to push down this belief. And every time it rears its head, you can go, well, actually, what am I thinking about? Because that isn't right. Equally, not every ball gets hit for six. I wouldn't have thought. However, if you are bowling your first six balls and they are going out of the park, then you will do well to get that second over from your captain. But I bet that isn't happening either. So again, use the scorebook, because we all have these thoughts. You know, we all think negatively at times. Everybody has doubts. But ultimately, when we look in the cold light of day and the cold light in facts, a lot of these doubts that we have simply aren't relevant, true, or valid. So certainly those ones aren't. And then go back to your first statement is, you know, when you try and strut around, it looks fake. Well, simply I would say don't strut about. Just be yourself. And if yourself is a fairly understated character, then be that understated character. Just because Shane Warne's of this world were naturally gregarious and in your face and what have you, doesn't mean to say that everybody has to copy it, because the, one of the reasons why Shane Warne was so successful was he was being himself. That was him. But equally, there have been a lot of spin bowlers down the years who have been different characters. You know, they might be bouncy type people but a bit quieter. They might be quite withdrawn people, and there's no templates of a personality characteristics that you have to have to be a successful spin bowler. So if you are a quiet, under the radar, overachieving type of person that is working really hard on their game, and as a result their skills are getting better, then be that person, and just be skillful with it would be my view on that. But look at the stats, because all of those statements that you made, I would be very, very surprised if you could back those up statistically.
It becomes self-fulfilling, doesn't it, Lavis? Something goes wrong and you say, oh, here we go again. This is exactly what I expected to happen. And then suddenly you aren't bowling very well anymore, and then it gets worse. But if you can get out of that loop and remember that those things that you're thinking aren't the truth, then it can help you sort of refocus and get back to doing what you know you can do because you've put that much practice in.
Absolutely. I've actually had an instance like that in the last week or so where we've had an under 15 who's didn't have a particularly good day a week ago. Got hit for three or four sixes at the death in a game, and he's a left arm fastish bowler, can swing it well, can cut the ball away well, really, really effective bowler, didn't have a good day, and he carried that with him into the game we had yesterday. And initially he had he started with three men back on the leg side. Immediately you could see he was worried about getting hit, and because he was thinking about this, defending this onslaught attack that was going to happen, and he was expecting to bowl poorly, subsequently it was always going to happen, and it only happened for one over, because after that we said, well, if you're thinking about, and this is your head, it's more likely to happen, so what do we want to think about? Now, as in this case, Venkat's obviously thinking about getting hit for six, thinking about bowling a bad ball, thinking about bowling a long hop or an overpitch ball or whatever it might be. And that's, again, increasing the chance of that happening. Whereas if we focus on a positive outcome, and bowling the ball in the right area and thinking about getting through our action the way we want to do it and releasing the ball the way I want to do it and drawing the batsman into a shot we want, then we're increasing the chance of that happening. So what we did with this left arm over we've got Felix is we started to first of all think about all the positive experiences he's had, and Gareth has suggested there that it's unlikely that Venkat has had an incessant list of failures and being hit for six and all that kind of thing. So we said to Felix, you've probably played 25 games of cricket this year in club and school and all that kind of thing. You've had one, let's not focus on the one, let's focus on the 24. The other thing we said was, why not put a slip in there? And immediately people think, well, put a slip in there? Why would I do that? Well, as soon as you put a slip in there, your mindset goes towards taking the edge of the bat. And if you're thinking about taking the bat, edge of the bat, you're picturing bowling a good ball. And if you're picturing bowling a good ball, you're thinking about doing something successful and you're increasing your chances of doing that successful thing. So we kind of pushed him the other way. Rather than being all out defence, we started to go, not all out attack, obviously, but just a little bit of attack. And maybe that's something you can think of your strategy of a way to have a visual recognition that you are a good bowler and you've earned a slip. It might be one thing that you could do, or you've got a slip in there, makes you picture some success, rather than the doom and gloom of the impending fours and sixes and barrage of the batter running down the pitch at you and putting you back over your head. So that's just a little kind of example of someone we've had who's been in a similar situation. And quite quickly, we've tried to bump him out of it, and subsequently, he bowled his following three overs partially coincidentally, but partially because of a little boost of confidence, really, really well.
One of the good exercises you can do as well is say, when you have any kind of negative thought like that, is say, and then what? Because eventually you'll get to the point where it becomes ridiculous. You know, well, I might bowl a bad ball. Well, then what? Well, he might hit me for six. Okay, well then what? Well, I might get taken off. Okay, well then what? Well, I might not bowl again in that game. Okay, well then what? Well, I might get dropped from the team. Okay, well then what? You see how it gets to the root of it so quickly that you can find out what your actual fear is. You know, it's, oh, I'll drop from the team, I'll never play another game of cricket again. You know, I'll end up on the streets with no shoes. You know, it becomes ridiculous very, very quickly. If you can do that, if you can put it into a bit of a better context, okay, well, actually, that guy is allowed to hit a six. There's nothing in the rules that says he's not allowed to hit it for six, especially if it's a bad ball. I'm allowed to bowl a bad ball sometimes. If I bowl more bad balls than good balls, I need to work a bit harder in the nets, but that's okay. I can do that. But all of these things need to be taken into context. And if you say to yourself, and then what? Eventually you'll get to what the actual fear is and you'll realise how silly it can be sometimes.
No, I think that's a good way of looking at it. So you can attack it in a number of different ways. And it would be safe to say, going back on some previous stuff, that instead of thinking about what you're trying to do, think about what the sort of consequence of success might be. So I'm sure you can remember the last time that your teammates have mobbed you because you got a wicket. Think about that. You know, Tiger Woods used to think about when he had a really tough putt, maybe a 10-foot putt, which statistically, anything from 10 foot has got about a 50% chance for the top putters of going in or not going in. But he used to not think about the process of it. He used to think about picking the ball out of the hole. So just before he struck the ball, he'd think about picking the ball out of the hole, because most of the time when he picked the ball out of the hole, he did it perfectly. So if he's thinking about that end result, then the putt often rolled in from 10 foot, even though the stats would say that most people are 50% from that distance. And I think we can do the same. You know, think about raising your bat if it's a batting doubt that you've got. Think about walking off the field not out because you've got your side over the line, and there's no better feeling than walking back over the line not out. You know, think about being mobbed by your mates when you've got a wicket, because that's happened to you, Venkat. That's definitely happened, probably recently. So you can go back into that experience, and then let's see what happens when you bowl the ball. I've got a feeling that you might feel a bit more comfortable. But going back to my first point, check the stats, because I believe some of your beliefs are slightly erroneous.
Yeah, it's an opportunity, isn't it? Even if you bowl badly, it's an opportunity to learn, you know, what you need to do to bowl better. So, you know, there's no downside. It's all grist for the mill. That is the end of the show for another week. Before we leave, there is one more thing we need to do, and that's decide on the winner of this week's competition. The prize on offer is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions on offer are James's question about encouraging school cricket in the UK, and Venkat's question about confidence while bowling spin. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Venkat's. I think there was a lot of disclosure there, wasn't there, about some of the thoughts and that he was going in. And that's pretty deep stuff that doesn't always come out. So I really appreciate you, the insight that you've given us on that. And I think in the way that it's been answered, there's four or five different methods that you can use to try and get over that. But just remember that you've got the biggest talent of all, and that's the talent to want to work hard.
Fantastic. Congratulations. And for everyone else listening to the show who are thinking about sending in a question and maybe winning that prize, Gareth, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get us through various other means. There is the Pitch Vision messaging system, of course, over at pitchvision.com, along with all the social media functions that we've got there. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter at pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so by subscribing in your favourite podcast app. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and you will find us in there. Tap on subscribe and away you go. And if you want to get all the old show notes, you want to read some articles, and you want to download some shows, maybe stream it from your web browser, you can do all of that stuff over at pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link there for all the details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Garrus. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, all.
Cheers, guys.